You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, July 31st, 2026. I'm your host, Nick Seabrook. Rabble.ca shares the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. We're continuing to explore our archives this summer, and this week we're sharing an episode from 2019 in which then-host Victoria Fenner sits down with Libby Davies to discuss her new book, Outside In, a Political Memoir. Listeners of Rabble Radio will know Libby Davies as a longtime host and guest on Rabble's political panel series Off the Hill, and will perhaps also know that from 1997 to 2019 she served as an NDP Member of Parliament for Vancouver East. In this interview, Davies shares her thoughts about life as a politician and as a fighter for equality and justice. From May 2019, here's that episode. Take a listen.
So Libby, I remember you from co-op radio days down in the downtown east side where you spent an awful lot of time about the same time I was there. I was there between 82 and 87. And so I remember you came down to co-op radio a lot for our fundraising campaigns and for interviews on Red Eye. And so you didn't know me, but I certainly knew who you were.
Oh, that's wonderful, Victoria. Yeah, I was actually down at Co-op Radio just on Saturday doing an interview. And, well, there's lots of history there. I think Co-op Radio started about the same time, 73 maybe, that the Downtown Eastside Residents Association, DERA, started. So, yeah, I was in and out of there all the time.
So what was it about the Downtown Eastside that inspired you in those very, very early days of your life in activism?
I don't know if inspired is the right word. It was more compelling. I was involved in 1972 in setting up a low-cost food store that continued on for many years. And then the next year, it kind of morphed over into the same group of students that I was part of starting a newspaper. And about the same time, as mentioned, the Downtown Eastside Residents Association, which was really like a kind of a militant union of people who lived in the neighborhood, was beginning. And until then, the community had no identity. It wasn't even considered as a community as we would normally think of a community. It was sort of like nowhere land. It didn't exist on city planning maps. It was called Skid Row. Nobody wanted to pay attention to it. And it was the organizing and the arrival of DERA and this very strong militant voice where, you know, a lot of people who lived in the neighborhood got involved because many of them were retired union members. They were resource workers who'd been hurt in the resource industries like mining and logging and fishing and so on. And so it became just an incredible community of activism that continues to this day. But back then it was considered somehow radical to be thinking that Skid Row should be on the map, that it was a real community and that people had the same kind of needs for libraries and housing and parks that anybody else had. I mean, it seems incredible now, but that's what it was like.
And you write in the book that your experiences in the Downtown East Side helped create the person and also the politician who you became. Can you elaborate on that for us?
Well, I've always seen myself as an organizer, and that certainly comes from those early days in the Downtown East Side. That's where I learned my political skills, partly from Bruce Erickson, who was my partner, but also from other people like Gene Swanson. We were all working together. And so I always felt that my politics didn't really come from sort of the political party mode, which it does for many people, right? They join a party, they get involved. Some people it's, you know, on an issue that they might be involved in, environment or fighting racism. For me, it was about organizing in this very low income inner city community. And, you know, I learned how to navigate what it was all about at City Hall. We eventually ended up running for City Council. I think we got to the point where we felt, okay, we're organizers, but if these people at City Hall aren't representing us, maybe we should run. Maybe we should get in there. And so we started running. I mean, we never had a plan to do it. It was sort of a natural evolution of the organizing and the work we were doing in the neighborhood to then begin to take on larger issues across the city and to start speaking out and thinking, you know, we could be there to help the shape the direction of the city into the future. And of course, many of the issues that we were working on then are still around today. But it was very much a core of my political development. I had no training. I dropped out of university. So everything I learned basically came from organizing on the street, in the rooming houses, fighting for people's rights, and then learning how civic government works, and then eventually into parliament.
And you were very young when you were elected to Vancouver City Council, too. I mean, do you have any perspectives on what it's like now for young people to get into politics based on your experience?
Well, when I ran, I think I was 23 when I first ran, and I was elected to the park board when I was 27, and then shortly after that, city council. And back then, first of all, there were very few women, progressive women in politics, and there was very few young people. And I think it's amazing to see how those changes have taken place. I mean, I think that's one good thing that's happened in the political arena is that there's a lot more young people. And I really was struck by that in the 2011 election when all of the young NDP MPs from Quebec got elected. It was just amazing to see them, you know, in the parliament buildings and how they changed the very nature of the debate from their own experience and their own perspective. So I think that's a very good change. But when I was running, I mean, there were other young people who ran, but it was much harder to get elected, I think. Maybe I'm wrong on that. I don't know, but it just felt like it. And because, there was very few women and there were very few young people who were actually elected.
It was an incredibly volatile time in BC in the 1980s, too. So what a baptism of fire, eh?
Well, the 1980s was one of the sort of periods of major austerity programs, a recession. We had a provincial government here that was madly cutting back services. We had the federal program that was cutting back on services. And so it was a very volatile time, Victoria. And I learned a lot from that, too, because it really meant working in strong alliances with people in the labor movement, in other community organizations. There was a lot of that that I couldn't get in the book. It just became too much. But when I first got elected to City Council, I think just about the first vote we had was to say no to massive cuts in public services at City Hall. And now when I look back on that, I think, wow, you know, especially for you folks in Ontario, like, you're still fighting that. I mean, now you've got the Ford government. We've got, you know, massive cutbacks at the local level. So this is an ongoing issue, of course, under the kind of system we live under neoliberalism, the trade deals, privatization. This is what they try to do over and over again. And what I've found is that this idea of sort of resistance and fighting back and supporting public services is a lifelong thing. You can't rest on any laurels of gains that might have been made. It's something that keeps coming up. We have to keep going after it, as we see today in Ontario.
So how long were you in municipal politics? And I'm wondering what made you decide to make the switch from municipal to federal?
I was elected at the municipal level for about 12 or 13 years, five terms on city council and one at the park board. They were short terms then. And I actually ran for mayor in 1993 and I lost. And after that, I actually went back to work in the downtown east side. And I didn't think about running federally, but a number of people approached me because the NDP had lost Vancouver East, the area where I lived, in the 93 federal election. That's when the NDP really kind of plummeted from having, I think it was like 44 seats, and they went down and lost party status. So it was a very difficult time. So people encouraged me to run, and I made a very difficult decision to run. So again, I never contemplated, I never planned to run, and I feel that that's sort of a bit of a story for me over these 40-plus years, that things just kind of happened. I happened to be in, you know, at this place at this time, and this was going on, and I just kind of got involved, or people urged me to get involved, and one thing led to another, and that's really how I started to run as a member of parliament and was elected in 1997.
So does municipal politics really prepare you for federal politics, or is it a very different thing?
It is very different at the federal level from the municipal level, but it does prepare you. I mean, I had a sense about what debates are about looking at policy documents, about making decisions and voting, and how you develop relationships with your allies or even your adversaries. But I also found Ottawa just unbelievably different. I mean, municipal government is by and large much more egalitarian. It's much more each councillor really counts with their vote. It's a very different kind of forum. In Ottawa, it's very hierarchical. It's very party-focused. There are so many rules and procedures, and I had to figure that out. I mean, I got there knowing what I needed to do because there were literally life and death issues in our community that needed to be addressed, but I really didn't have a clue about how to go about making sense of that Ottawa world and Parliament Hill. And I jumped into it, but it took me a while to figure that out about even what my role was as a member of parliament. You know, you're the third party, you're a backbencher. Like, how do you get visibility for the issues you're working on? How do you fight the stuff? I worked at that, but I really do believe that my organizing background or my background at City Hall really helped me with that. And I'm very grateful for it.
In the prologue to the book, you have a very poignant section about your first day on the Hill. Do you want to tell us a bit about that?
Well, yes, one of those days you don't forget. It was the first day of the new parliament in 1997. I was on the front lawn, and there was a wonderful fellow, Julius Fisher, who was filming me on my first day. I don't know how he got to Ottawa, but he did. And there was a big anti-choice rally taking place, and I was like feeling really mad about it. Like, why did they have to be here, of all people? And then I realized I was late, because the first item in a new parliament is the election of the speaker, which I really didn't know much about. But we were all told to be there, and I could hear the clock chiming. And it's like, oh, my God, I'm late. And then Julius asked me, what would Bruce think about you being here? And I kind of fell apart, because Bruce had died, barely 3 months before that. He died 3 days after I was nominated to be the candidate in Vancouver East. And so being in Ottawa, I felt both lost and like, what the hell am I doing here personally, but also seized with this feeling that I had to do things because there was so much going on, particularly in the downtown east side where people were dying from overdoses as they still are today and across the country. So it was a very powerful moment that first day because I felt, as I often have felt in my life, out of place. I don't belong here. What am I doing here? But then compelled to move on and to get past that and to say, I know what I got to do, right? And so that's what that day was about.
And that's why your book is called Outside In. Is that right?
That's right. It's the idea that, you know, it's being on the outside, it's being on the inside. What is the connection between that? It's something that's always fascinated me, the connection between social movement activism or activism generally and the formal world of politics, how they often don't connect with each other. And there's a lot of misunderstanding, even though we might be working on the same issues, but different worlds. And so that's always been of interest to me. And I've always felt like, because of my experiences, I was sort of a bit of a bridge between these two worlds, having experienced both worlds. And so it seemed like a kind of a good short title to say, well, there's the outside and there's the inside. And, you know, how do these things work?
So this is probably a hard question to answer, but what would you say if you had to choose three best things about being an MP? What were the three best things for you?
Oh, that's so hard, Victoria.
Two then.
I think first and foremost was actually feeling this sense of honor about representing like a real community or a whole bunch of communities. Like Vancouver East is a very vibrant community. There's a lot of activism there. I always felt like so honored to represent a community that had so much going on. Like there was no end to stuff that I could jump into and talk to people about and things that we needed to fight about, not with each other, but with the government. And so to me, that's what grounded me. Whenever I would leave Ottawa on a Thursday or Friday, I'd think, oh my God, what the hell happened here in Ottawa? It was all this minutiae and all the going, especially when I was the house leader for 8 years. It was East Vancouver that kept me grounded. It was the people I encountered who were really surviving, you know, people having really tough times in their life. It was those people who were inspiring and motivating. I think probably another thing is being able to watch how issues became more mainstream. I think a lot of the issues I worked on when I first worked on them were considered very non-mainstream and very marginal. And even within my own caucus, it was like, oh my God, what is Libby up to again? You know, but over time, those issues, like, for example, a safe injection site, now most places in the country, certainly in Vancouver, nobody would quarrel or oppose a safe injection site. But back then, it was like, are you crazy? What do you, you know, this isn't going to happen. You know, the whole issue of the criminalization of people who use drugs. So I've always felt that was a place that I had and a role that I had was to take on some of these issues that were challenging and difficult and help make them, I don't want to use the word mainstream, but to help bring them forward in visibility and make it clear that there needs to be a response by, you know, a public policy response to some of these critical issues. And, of course, they're ongoing, but I always felt I played a good role in that, and that was part of who I am and continues to be, actually.
So was it difficult during the last election to sit there and watch everything unfold around you, knowing that you weren't there, or was it just a relief or a combination of things?
Well, I was quite involved in BC in the national campaign. I went around and did tours of different ridings and spoke and that kind of thing. It was mixed. I was, on a personal level, I counted up once how many elections I've run in. I've forgotten what it is now, but it's way too much. And so there was a relief that I was like, wow, I don't actually have to be out there, you know, 16 hours a day, knocking on doors, putting up signs, whatever, going to candidate, you know, because I was tired. I was tired. But there was also a feeling of like, oh my God, I want this to go better, right? We need to do this. And, you know, so that organizer instinct in me again, looking at that campaign in 2015 that I didn't run in, where the NDP had a very difficult campaign and we had a difficult result in terms of where we've been. That was a difficult one. And there was lots of debate. There still is today, my goodness, about, you know, what happened in that campaign. And so I didn't mind being, quote, on the sidelines. I had a role to play. But I was still politically engaged, and that will always be the case for me.
So are you optimistic as the federal election approaches? It seems with so many provinces going conservative, are you fearful that we'll see the same thing at the federal level again?
I think it's always an issue and it's always a threat that's there. And I worry about it like everybody else, and we watch what's going on in the U.S. But I also, even in the U.S., I look at the amazing levels of activism that are emerging and some of the new candidates that are emerging, even within the Democratic Party. And it does give one a sense of hope. And I really feel, and I hope that comes over to across the border to Canada. We've seen conservative governments elected in this country provincially now. We just had the Alberta election. We've had other elections. And so to me, it's going to be very critical in terms of the role that the NDP plays. I'm still a member of the NDP. I want to see us in a party that's bold, that's courageous, that's willing to take on the big issues of our time, like climate change, like social justice, and making sure that there's a transition, a just transition from a fossil fuel-based economy. These are the huge challenges. I just signed on a couple days ago to the pact for the Green New Deal, right? I think that kind of stuff is what we need to embrace, and we need to push every political party to say, what are you going to do? This is real. This is upon us. And it's not only about the environment. It's also about social justice for people. It's about good jobs. And there are tough decisions to be made, and I want to see my party be a party that stands up to those tough decisions and makes the right decisions. So, I'll try to be involved as much as I can. And it's going to be a very interesting election. So stay tuned on that one. I know Rabble will be very involved in coverage and giving us news and analysis. And that's a good thing because we can't rely on the corporate media to do that. Right. And so it's the role that Rabble plays is very important in the upcoming federal election.
And that was one of the reasons why you were at Co-op Radio all those many years ago, too, because you recognized that was important and part of the same kind of thing that Rabble's doing.
Yes. And you know what, Victoria? I'm an ongoing, whatever you call it, member, a donor to both Rabble and Co-op Radio, to both national and local, because I just think it is so important. We do all this work. People are incredible in what they take on and do in sometimes very difficult circumstances. But we have to have the stories. We have to have our stories out there. We have to be able to speak with each other and support each other. And so progressive independent media like Co-op Radio, like Rabble, is so critical to that. So I'm a big supporter of promoting that and saying, let's give some money, if I can put in a plug. Let's keep this going because, it is a struggle. People are making it work and we have to support it.
And let's wrap up by talking about your story that you're on a tour now promoting. So tell us more about your book and where people can pick it up and where they can meet you. You have some events coming up.
We have a bunch. I think we have 6 events coming up sort of on the first leg of the tour. I'm beginning in Toronto on May 15th at the CSI on Spadina Avenue, and then back to Vancouver for May 22nd, then Winnipeg, May 27th, then 2 events in Ottawa, May 29th and 30th, and then 2 events June the 9th in Hamilton and Mississauga. There's other smaller things that aren't necessarily that public. They're sort of like organizations who are hosting something. But those are the public launches. I think there'll be more as well, likely in September. So it's been very busy. Writing a book is one thing, but wow, I never realized there was so much that comes after that in actually, helping get the message out. And so it's been quite fun to engage with that and to focus on helping people know that this book is available. You can buy it at your local bookstore. If they don't have it, ask them to order it. You can order online, but of course your independent bookstore is a good place to go. And so I've been getting feedback already of people posting a picture on Facebook holding their book. So that's been kind of cool to see the last few days as people are picking up the book.
Well, congratulations on getting it done, and have fun on the tour. And thanks a lot for talking to me.
Oh, you're very welcome.
That was a clip from 2019 in which Victoria Fenner sat down with Libby Davies. To listen to the full original program, visit the link in our show notes of this episode. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. This week's In Case You Missed It is presented by Rabble's Leah Lagradell.
Starting this week, in national news, a Canadian CEO worth $11 billion USD expressed that he feels that billionaires should hold all of the political power in society. Toby Lutka, the current CEO of Shopify, wrote on X.com that, quote, "When you get your pension deal, it's locked in and guaranteed. But now, you are a dependent, and that means no voting, just like dependents under age. Enjoy the deal, let people with a stake in the future decide," end quote. Lutka doubled down in response to a post from ex-user named Eric S. Thor. Thor put forward a proposition that those who pay more income tax should get more votes. Of course, this meant those paying no income tax would get no votes. Lutka's views generated a lot of reactions on X from prominent labor leaders. Lana Payne, president of Canada's largest private sector union, Unifor, condemned Lutka for trying to place all of the power in the hands of the wealthy and privileged. Likewise, the president of the Alberta Federation of Labor, Gil McGowan, said that billionaires were society's biggest pressing problem. The CEO of Shopify, one of Canada's largest corporations, says the poor and the elderly should not be allowed to vote. "It's pretty clear that billionaires are the real problem, not ordinary citizens," McGowan said in response on X.com. The people that Lutka aims to disenfranchise, such as the elderly and Canadian citizens that don't pay income taxes, would be left without any political power. Can Canadians afford to be open to exploitation in the hands of CEOs? Moving on to labor news, WestJet flight attendants have been bargaining for a new collective agreement that meets their demands for fair compensation. WestJet flight attendants, who are represented by the Canadian Union of Public Employees, QP Local 8125, have been fighting for their compensation since September of 2025. The workers voted in favor of a strike earlier this month, and a stoppage of work could be happening as early as August 2nd. On Thursday morning, QP 8125 issued a 72-hour strike notice. The union emphasized that the workers do not want to go on strike, but they will if they are made to do so. The main issue causing the strike is the hours the flight attendants have spent working despite some of these hours being unpaid. Alia Hussein, the president of QP 8125, has said, quote, "We have been clear about what needs to change, and we have worked hard to reach a fair deal," end quote. In a recent press release, Hussein said that the union will continue to bargain until this is resolved. She believes her members deserve a fair contract and sees the real value in the flight attendants not getting their proper payments.
And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks so much for listening. To help support our show further, consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and YouTube. You can also choose to subscribe to us over on Patreon for special bonus content of Rabble Radio. If you're already subscribed, consider making a donation to Rabble.ca at Rabble.ca/donate. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on Rabble.ca. And thank you to Carl Nuremberg for supplying the music to this episode. I'm Nick Seabrook, and we'll talk to you next time.